Hey, welcome to the Deep Water Podcast, where we learn to make disciples the way Jesus makes disciples. Sorry I haven't been with you guys in a while. I am ready to produce an episode today and hope to be doing more of them in the future again. Today, I want to talk about something that's just foundational to me in disciple making. It's one of the core things that shapes the way I think about disciple making. And I'm going to put it in the terms of why the persecuted church often makes disciples. That's the topic today. Now, I've wanted to do this a long time. And in fact, the first time when this really hit me, what I wanted to do was write a book about it. But I just didn't have a book in me at that time. And so that led to podcasting. Now, I wanted to share about it in this podcast, for a long time as well. But I felt like, I remember recording it one time. But what I felt like is that I just had this disgruntled and kind of ugly spirit about it. And I didn't want to put that out. So I erased that one, put it on the back burner for a while. But today I think I'm ready and I want to talk to you about it. So why does the persecuted church often make disciples? I took all this training that I'd had overseas. Then I was reading a book by Nick Ripken, and it was just the way he phrased something in there. It kind of all clicked together for me. And this came out of it. Why does the persecuted church often make disciples? And I say often because sometimes we lift the persecuted church up on a pedestal that they're not ready for and they're not really able to stand on. They don't always make disciples. It doesn't always look this way, but oftentimes it does. And so the way I would phrase the question for you, and I've enjoyed asking people this question over the years, the question is this: what if you knew that somewhere within the next, say, year, you were going to be arrested and you would be gone for at least 1 to 3 years? What would you do differently in your ministry? And let's complete the context saying, you know, you're a persecuted church, so you can't just like go hire another pastor. That doesn't exist. A lot of whether your family is taken care of or not will depend upon the church that is around them to take care of them while you are arrested. So ponder that a minute. If you want, stop the podcast and just think about that. What would I do differently in my ministry if I knew that somewhere, 100% certainty, that somewhere within the next year, I was going to be arrested? And when I was arrested, I would be gone for at least 1 to 3 years. What would I do differently? Pause and think about that for a second. All right, do you have your answer? Are you back with me? So this is what I would do. I would grab somebody and I'd say, hey, listen, if I don't show up next week, this is how you fill in the blank, right? This is how you lead a small group discussion. This is how you lead people in worship. This is how you preach a message. This is how you share your faith. And what I would do is I'd be very actively replacing myself. And I'd be replacing myself because I don't know. Let me rephrase that. I'd be replacing myself because I would know that I would need to be replaced. I would not be thinking about serving in this position for 20 years, teaching my Sunday school class for the next 20 years, which is great if you do that, but it's better if during your 20 years of teaching a Sunday school class, if you raised up 20 other Sunday school class teachers along the way, or if you're a pastor, instead of just thinking about pastoring a church for 20 years, what would it look like to raise up pastors along the way? And not through this method. This is where we get off in different opinions of how the best way to prepare leaders. But not in terms of like, get this person, they're interested, ship them off to seminary for 2 or 3 years, then get them back, have them as a youth group leader for a while, slowly work their way up till finally they make their way up to be a senior pastor. Not like that. Because again, the persecuted church doesn't mean they don't have some options for Bible training. It doesn't mean there aren't some underground seminaries somewhere, but that's not how they train their leaders. That's not how the persecuted church raises up a new pastor. Sometimes they're just thrown to the fire, and sometimes it doesn't work out well. The pastor gets arrested and someone just steps up because nobody else knows. But in the most bestest times, situations, they're actively raising up their replacement. This is what you need to know. When I'm not here, this is how you do it. And the funny thing is, we do this in our work sometimes. Let's say if you have a family business, maybe this is another example of if it goes well. You know, you're teaching your son, hey, this is how you, I grew up on a ranch. This is how you check wells. This is how you ride a horse. This is how you herd a cattle. This is how you keep an eye on the cow that's going to lead the herd astray. All these different things. So this is how you gather in a pasture. This is how you flank a calf. This is how you brand. The list could go on and on and on. And we're actively teaching people. And that is foundational to the way I think about making disciples. From the first time I start teaching a class, that's usually the context that I think of is more inside of like a small group, more in a house church, but it fits in a church too. As soon as I start, I'm already beginning to who can I begin training? Who can I begin giving experience to? So I want to flesh this out in an example for you. So one time when we were home, from being overseas, we were meeting with a church and we were working on them with storying. Now, we really enjoy storying. Storying is more like we're going to learn a story. We're going to tell it multiple times. We're going to interact with the story. We're going to ask questions about the story. And we're going to allow the story to teach us. So it's kind of a guided method. The person facilitating it isn't specifically lecturing. In fact, they're specifically not lecturing. They're going to tell the story. They're going to have some other people help retell the story, help the group retell the story, see if someone can retell the story, have people pair up with one another and retell the story. And there's reasons for all of this we can go into another day. And then they're going to ask questions about the story, some very, very basic general ones that you can ask about every story, and then maybe some specific questions about this story. And then in the end, you're going to come up with what God wants them to do. What do you think God wants you to do with this story, and who else can you tell about it? That's the basics. So when we would do something like that, the very first time I would tell the story and I would lead everything. And at the very end, this was like the key question. The very end, I've done everything else. I say, okay, who would like to tell the story next week? Or I might pick somebody. And when I pick them, or they are self-picked, say, great, when can we get together this week? Now, if it's a lady, then it's going to be, when can Jill and I get together with you? If it's a guy, it might just be me. Or we might have them over for a meal. When we have them over, we're not going to just run through the story real quick and go on. Like, we're going to spend some time with them. We're going to ask them about their life. We're going to ask them about what God's teaching them. We're going to do some of these disciple-making things. But then somewhere in there, we're going to get around and say, okay, this is how you learn a story. Here's the story we're covering. You know, here's some different methods you can use to learn it. And they're going to learn it. We're going to practice it with them there. They're going to go home and practice it. And then at the beginning of the next week, we're going to ask, hey, what did you learn last week? How did it go? Okay, today Bobby is going to tell us our story. So then Bobby tells a story, and then I do the rest. Okay, now let's retell it as a group. Okay, now we do this. Now the questions, blah, 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 blah. Now at the end, okay, who can tell the story again next week? And choose somebody different. And then a little bit later, you know, give it a few weeks, I'm going to bring Bobby back in. Hey, Bobby, can you tell the story next week? Only, you know, last time I had him just tell the beginning story. This time, he's going to tell the story and do the helping the group retell it. And I'm just slowly going to add to him. And once he gets to where he's good there, I'm going to do one of two things. I'm going to either say, okay, who can ask the questions next week? Bobby, can you come meet with me this week? And let's learn how to ask the questions. Or I might say, okay, who can teach the story? Hey, Bobby and I are going to meet with you, and we're going to go over how to tell the story. So I'm going to be bringing him in. And by the time I'm done, by the time he knows how to tell the story, how to ask the questions, how to meet with somebody to teach them how to tell the story, he's basically ready to lead a whole group. So that's an example of what that would look like practically. And so, like, in some ways, I'm just doing less and less every week, like in the actual meeting time. I'm doing more on the sides. Now, I might jump back in if it's been a couple of weeks and I feel like they need kind of a refresher or to see it fresh. This is how you tell the story at the beginning, then I might pick it up. But generally speaking, I'm getting somebody else doing it new each week, and then they're repeating and they're growing. I remember we were doing this at a church in New Mexico, Clovis. And you know, I started with a deacon and did a couple of the deacons, pulled them out to do it. We were just kind of modeling it. And then I was asking one of them, hey, who do you think could tell the story? And they were like, I'm not really sure if there's anybody else that could do it. And so just to pick on them, you know, the next time I had this 11-year-old boy that was a part of the group, had him tell the story. And there was a lot of people that nobody thought would speak up that, yeah, they were going to take their turn and they were going to tell the story and they could do that. And it's amazing the participation you get and the growth you get if you have time to develop that over time. So there's an example of what it looks like practically or in that situation. And in the giving experience, the two ditches that the church often falls into one way or the other is they either fall into the ditch of they never really give people opportunities to serve in those kind of ways, in ministering ways. They let you greet, they let you hand out bulletins, they let you set up chairs, and all those are good, but they never let you minister to other people. And that is key and foundational to growth to me. So on one side, they either never let you, they always train you, but never let you play. You always go to practice, but you never get in the game, that side. The other side, the other ditch that they can fall into is they say, oh, you'll teach Sunday school? That's great. Here's a leader's guide. Let me know if you have any questions. And that's all the training you ever get. You never learn how to do it. Or you just never get the opportunity. Where we want to be is right down the middle of the road in this one. And the middle of the road looks like this. This is how, hey, would you like to learn how to teach? This is how you do it. Why don't you and I meet separately? I'll go over it with you. And then you begin handing them different parts of leading a small group, for example. You let them do a little bit. Hey, today you're going to take prayer requests and then pray. And then you follow up. And next time, hey, today I'm going to have you lead this portion of the Bible study. And then you follow up. The follow-up is key. It's this ongoing thing, and they each time they get just a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more until all of a sudden you're no longer necessary there. Either you can leave or they can leave. But whoever leaves, the other one is competent and qualified to go lead another group or lead another Bible study or start another church. And you're also competent. And so now you have two workers. Foundational. So my question for you, ponder this again now that you've heard me think about this. What should you be doing differently in your ministry, in your spiritual Christian life? What should you be doing differently with this idea that you don't really know when you'll be gone? And that's the crux for us. Sometimes we just don't really think about death until we're older. We don't think about leaving. We just kind of assume we'll always be there. So what are you going to do differently in your ministry this week based on what I just shared? And equally important, who are you going to begin training? What is it that you know how to do that you could train somebody else to do? Which leads to a follow-up. What if I don't know how? What if no one ever trained me? Boy, I've been in a bunch of those situations in my life. Option one is you go find somebody who knows how to do this that I could ask to teach me. If you have a plural amount of people, that's a better thing because some people are good at doing but not good at teaching. Some people would say yes, but then they never get around to it. So who could you ask? The other option is, okay, where in the scriptures could I learn this? Where could God teach me how to do this? And the last option is, okay, with faith, I'm going to just do the best I can and I'll learn as I go. And I may have to learn as I go, but I tell you what, the guy or gal that I train, they're not going to have to start from square one on this. I'm going to make sure they know how. So those are my thoughts today. It has been a while since I've talked with you guys, and I appreciate your patience. I appreciate it when I see episodes listened to, even if it's been a while since I've made one. I myself, little update on me, I have been busy. I'm working for a new mission organization called One Link International. It's been really good. We're involved in missions training, missions education, missions mobilization, specifically with college students. So it's been really wonderful. And we have a podcast called, very cleverly, the One Link Podcast. So I'm on it, and we are talking a lot about making disciples of all nations. Discipling the nations, what's it look like? It's going to be geared more towards being overseas or towards engaging internationals. So it's got a good focus there, but we have lots of really great guests on there. So if you'd like to check that out, it's the One Link Podcast. Should be available anywhere you get podcasts. Come check us out over there, and hopefully maybe I'll get a few more episodes put out here from time to time as well. And in the meantime, I encourage you to do what you can to replace yourself. Catch you next time on the Deepwater Podcast.